civic and community engagement is not a spectator sport. So you have to be engaged, like you have to be in it.
Welcome to Natural Collisions, brought to you by COAC Detroit. Conversations about the challenges and opportunities in the nonprofit sector, highlighting the voices and nonprofit work in Detroit and Southeast Michigan and beyond. I'm your host, Chardonnay Sanders, Program Manager at COAC Detroit. In this episode, we're diving into a vital topic for the nonprofit sector, civic engagement and public policy. Our conversation today will explore how civic participation and shaping public policy are essential to driving social change and ensuring equitable outcomes for all communities. Nonprofits and community organizations play a crucial role in mobilizing citizens, advocating for policy reforms, and amplifying the voices of those often unheard. The Colliders for this episode bring a wealth of experience in advocacy, policy, and community engagement, and they'll share insights on how nonprofits can effectively navigate these areas to further their impact. Our guests this month are Camelia K. Landrum.
Hello, my name is Camelia Landrum. I am the executive director for Detroit Branch and AACP. Very excited to be here and be a part of this conversation. I've had the pleasure of working with Joan and M&A. They are outstanding. And Regina has also been a good resource every time we've crossed paths to be able to say this is what we need to be doing. So great to be amongst friends for this conversation. The NAACP in Detroit was founded in 1912. So we have been here for over 100 years here in the city, making great impact in eliminating racism and discrimination. Our five areas are health, education, criminal justice, civic engagement, and economic prosperity, economic sustainability. And so that's mostly where a lot of our work falls within, or the buckets of our work, to be able to guide our policy work and our nonprofit mission. Right now, we're deeply engaged in civic engagement as election season is amongst us. So really excited to be having this conversation about what's going on in Michigan to help get out the vote and also just advance voting rights.
Joan Gustafson.
I'm Joan Gustafson. I'm the External Affairs Officer at the Michigan Nonprofit Association. Here at M&A, we're starting our 35th year of serving a very large and diverse nonprofit sector here in Michigan. There are more than 50,000 nonprofits, and that can be anything from a very small volunteer-led organization to a very large anchor institution like a hospital or a university. We employ more than 470,000 people here in the state, so people are often surprised to learn that we're much more of an economic driver, as well as being, you know, beneficial to the community and our neighborhoods. Most of the work we do at the association falls into three areas. So the first is we provide trainings and technical assistance for our very small nonprofits. The second is we advocate for the sector as a whole at the state level and the federal level. And since our beginning, since our founding, we've been doing civic and community engagement work.
And Regina Bell.
Regina Bell. I serve as Chief Policy Officer at the Council of Michigan Foundations. The Council of Michigan Foundations leads, strengthens, and supports Michigan's community of philanthropy. And specifically, my role at CMF is to lead our public policy work. And so that is working with our members and partnering in communities to really advance our five pillars or policy domains. Those policy domains include health, economic prosperity, education, health of the charitable sector, and civic and community engagement. And so one of the projects that we'll talk a little bit more about that the Council of Michigan Foundations was deeply engaged in along with our members is called the Statewide Equity Fund, where we really test the theory of Michigan philanthropy to help shape the use of ARPA resources, American Rescue Plan Act resources that were going to local units of government. So I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but that just gives you a flavor of some of the work that the Council of Michigan Foundation does in partnership and also on behalf of its members.
I am deeply inspired by all of the incredible work our guests are doing, and I'm sure you will be too. To set the tone, it's important to remember that behind leadership roles and impacting organizations are real people with powerful stories. Let's start by exploring what sparked our guests' passion for civic engagement and public policy. What moments or experiences shaped their journey and led them to the meaningful work they're doing today? Let's listen in.
Can I jump in first? So it's really a personal story, and it's a story about my grandfather on my father's side. So he was the first person of color to serve an elected position in a very rural town in Georgia, a town that is no more than 1,000 people. And while I was not necessarily born when he was serving, I feel as if my time in Georgia, I reaped some of the benefits of the policies that he was able to influence in this very rural town. It also really made me understand the importance of public policy in impacting every aspect of our lives, from the time that we wake up in the morning, the toothpaste that we use is regulated by the FDA, when we go to bed, the mattress that we sleep on, and everything obviously in between, and the real acknowledgement that public policy can be utilized as a great equalizer. But we also have seen historically in this country where public policy has been used both intentionally and unintentionally to create divides. And for some Americans, them having less than a chance or opportunity for a bright future. It has really driven me, and my entire career path has been focused on work in the public policy area. And it all stems from my grandfather.
That's awesome, Regina. Just because I feel like a lot of times when we end up in nonprofit work, it's because of something personal and something special. So how lucky for you to be able to kind of live out a family tradition and be able to have something so personal be an everyday life, a part of your everyday life. So I would say mine is kind of similar. Some childhood experiences I had. I grew up on the east side of Detroit, and I often crossed that Jefferson border between East Detroit and Grosse Pointe. And as a child, I could understand, or I could see the very stark differences between a community that had investment and a community that didn't have investment. And it was literally like night and day just crossing one street light, where on the Grosse Pointe side, everything was really beautiful, bright, brand new, well-kept, well-manicured. And then literally a block over, you saw abandoned buildings, some businesses that had not been open for a long time. And it was just this stark difference of what, kind of in your case, Regina, public policy looks like when it's put in motion to move communities forward versus public policy being put in place when it is put in motion to divide people. And so I was probably about 8 or 7 or 8 when I started asking my parents questions about, you know, why is this like this? Why does this appear this way? You know, I just think there needs to be something different done. It shouldn't be like this. And also to point out, you know, Grosse Pointe in East Detroit. So you also have very white on the Grosse Pointe side and then very black on the East Detroit side. So it was very clear that something was being done intentionally for there not to be equity there. And I just didn't understand it at such a young age. I think my second kind of pivotal moment was when I was graduating high school. This was right around the time affirmative action was really under attack in Michigan. And so I was kind of dealing with not knowing what my college admission policies I would be falling up under if I was trying to apply to the University of Michigan, Michigan State, all these public universities. And I was youth council president for NAACP at the time. So they were making sure that high school students actually had a voice in understanding what was happening with their college admissions. And I think those two things, as a really young person, trying to figure out why the world was operating as it does, kind of kept me involved with the NAACP and has continued this work of nonprofit. I've certainly learned as a older adult that all of those issues are connected to voting rights and how people show up at the polls and who's elected to be able to represent you and make decisions on your behalf. So I'm glad that I finally was able to kind of wrap that circle up to understand how it's all connected, but it's certainly what keeps me engaged right now as a leader in our community and civic engagement and just trying to push people forward.
Camilla, can I just, before Joan, you go, the one thing that I'll just also say, because you just reminded me of a really important connective tissue, is, you know, my grandparents on my mother's side who were, you know, raised in Detroit, one of the things that they used to always tell me is that civic and community engagement is not a spectator sport. So you have to be engaged, like you have to be in it. So they were lifelong members of NAACP, and I can remember, I didn't grow up in Detroit, but I can remember them taking me to events. I can remember them when they were actually signing folks up to register to vote as a little kid, just following them around. And so just listening to you talk made me think of fond memories and that really important note that it's not a spectator sport. You got to get in it if you want to see real change.
Yep, 100% agree. 100% agree.
That's so true. Thanks for sharing your stories. I didn't know that about either one of you. We've known each other for a while. But as I was listening to you, you know, I got to thinking, I mean, really from a young age, I think that's where this all started for me as well. Both my parents were teachers. They both were very active in their teachers' unions. I got dragged out of bed every, you know, or during this time of year with my dad to knock doors and put our little flyers on all the doors. So I understood also at a very early age how important it was to be involved and to actually have your voice heard, whether that was for your rights as a worker or for other things. But I will say that I never realized until I started working at M&A, which has been now more than 10 years, but I did not realize growing up in South St. Paul, Minnesota, and then fast forward to the work that I've, you know, had the privilege to lead and be part of at M&A, how when, if you are historically underrepresented, there are systems in place that constantly lock you out of these processes, you know, how much inequity or how unequal that becomes for neighborhoods like you both just described. And not just in terms of representation, but in terms of resources and funding, you know, federal and government funding, but also private sector investment. So it wasn't until later in life that I really kind of understood the entire scope of this work and just why it's so important.
Yeah, Joan, you know, listening to you also made me think. So I actually grew up in Ann Arbor, right? And so on the surface, when you talk about communities and resources that come to communities, you think about Ann Arbor and it's a resource-rich community. We often don't think about the communities, within the geographic boundaries that we might describe in terms of a local unit of government, right? So there are those communities within communities who oftentimes are the furthest from decision-making tables. And so I really think about part of our collective role, collective roles and the purposes of our respective organizations is to really ensure that those who are furthest from decision-making tables have a seat at the decision-making table. So just again, your comments just made me think a little bit about that.
Yeah.
COAC Detroit is committed to supporting nonprofits and community organizations across Southeast Michigan. We know nonprofits are doing amazing and critical work to serve our communities, but face deep systemic barriers that get in the way of reaching their missions. Public policy is a key component of activating the kind of social change that can really accelerate nonprofits' ability to fulfill their missions. So shifting gears a bit, let's dive into the nonprofit side of things. My questions for our guest are, what role do nonprofits play in addressing civic issues? What are some of the most pressing civic challenges facing nonprofits today? And what are some examples of nonprofit civic engagement in action? Let's explore these critical and timely questions in the conversation ahead.
Well, I can kick this one off as being working for the nonprofit sector. I spoke to some of my colleagues about this very issue in advance of our podcast today. And one of the things that came up several times was this idea of expanding access to civic engagement and combating apathy and disengagement. It just seems like a lot of our nonprofits that are working in this area are reporting that folks are just feeling like they're preaching to the choir, that they're not really expanding the circle, and that so many people that work for nonprofits and others there's a burnout. You know, every cycle we hear, oh, this is the most, you know, consequential election of our time. And yet every year we say that, and every year so many people don't see any tangible change. And so when I thought about, you know, what are the most pressing issues or urgent issues, I did think about that. And I was curious, especially Camelia, you know, if you're feeling that as well, you know, in your work.
No, I agree with you, Joan. And so like from an overall nonprofit status, I think all nonprofits are in a space where they're kind of fighting for their own protections and freedoms to be able to say what they need to say, how they want to say it, and really push, you know, be able to accomplish what our mission seek out without feeling like you're going to get some retaliation either from your board and or your funders, because you really are trying to show up in the space in which you were founded to be able to do this work. And so I think just kind of overall for nonprofits, whether that be healthcare, whether that be civic engagement, business, whatever it is that you're doing, I actually feel like all of us are kind of in the fight to just be able to protect that nonprofit status of, you know, the type of work that we want to be able to do and not have to feel like there's going to be retaliation again from funders, sponsors, maybe new members on your board that might have a different vision. You know, I think that's something I kind of hear from a lot of people. I also hear from a lot of leaders, like they actually want to do more. But again, there's some fear of, you know, feeling like they can get civically engaged and just understanding the power of being nonpartisan, but also just educating voters. And so I love when M&A puts on their, you know, what C3s and C4s can actually say, those kind of trainings, because I really think our democracy is at stake and what we are trying to protect as a people and our very freedoms of being able to have a democracy. And so you need more people to be able to get engaged in those conversations and to understand that just because you're talking about voting rights and voter education, that does not mean that you are telling a person what candidate to pick when they go to the polls. You're simply letting them know that, hey, this is when the election is. These are the types of issues that are going to be on the ballot. This is where you go and vote. This is the website you can go to if you need to find out your polling location. If you need to research candidates, this is a website you can go to where they may have put an interview together where you can learn about their platform. When you're giving folks that kind of information, that's education. That's not pushing a candidate. That's just making sure that they truly understand what civic engagement is. And I think if more nonprofits felt support and no backlash, you know, for getting involved with voter education, that we would probably have a more advanced society, especially as you see a lot of civic engagement and social studies being taken out of the school system. There's somewhere else where folks have to learn this information. And, you know, it can be a lot to process. And so it's already hard when folks only hear about election every 2 years when there is an election. You know, you want to keep making those investments, those little sound bites in their ears. You know, you wish you could do it every day. Sometimes you don't have enough funding for that, but you wish you could do it more. But, you know, you're doing it as best as you can when you have the resources in your hand. So I would love for, more leaders that run major nonprofits that touch a lot of people, whether that be in the food space, whether it be in housing, whether that be in sports. I would love for them to help their members understand how voter education really ties into the work that they're doing and that there's a connection for everybody. My reason for voting may be very different for your reason for voting. But at the end of the day, as a nonprofit, all of it comes back to the only reason you're able to be a nonprofit is because the legislature passed that you could have a C3 status. Like, all of these things literally go into the administration of the work that you're trying to do. And I wish more people could make that connection so that they would be more willing to include civic engagement and voter education in the work that they're doing and understand that it's not, that part is nonpartisan and you don't have to be fearful for making sure people know how to lift up their voices and be heard.
So when I think about civic participation, I think about kind of the broad definition of what it takes for a healthy democracy. And it is voting. It is census participation. It is participation in budgetary decisions. It is also being able to show up at jury duty and understanding the importance and reason for that. So it's a whole host of ways and things that we should be encouraging and helping prepare and bringing, you know, voice to for residents to really understand the importance of the whole kind of continuum of engagement and what it means for a healthy democracy.
Yeah, you're both, I couldn't agree more. And Camelia, you did hit on something about this is work that you're doing kind of every 2 years. And that's, you know, what happens when you're focusing on election cycles. But then Regina said, you know, it's bigger than that. And so one of the things we've learned and that we're trying to implement is to keep an ongoing discussion and keep the relationships going, because it's all about relationships. So all the nonprofits that we worked with, say in the census, which was hundreds. And then, you know, on the heels of that, we also worked with nonprofits to help communities understand the new redistricting commission that came after that. And then voting, whether it's the local election, the midterms, the presidential. So that kind of cohesiveness is helping. I mean, will, I think, help more than just that stop, start, stop, start. But it's hard, and of course, it costs money, and it takes resources to do it. But that's what we've been trying to do, to try to keep these programs going and keep the education and awareness top of mind, regardless if it's a presidential election or, you know, a census year or something like that. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
It is, especially because, you know, I think for NAACP, so like civic engagement is one of our five pillars. So it's not the only thing that we do. We still have criminal justice reform. We still have healthcare access, you know, economics, small businesses. So you're trying to balance, you know, you still got 12 months in a year where you're trying to get this work done and, you know, a team and of volunteers and staff. But, it certainly is different for nonprofits that may be single issue nonprofits versus nonprofits that are tackling multiple issues that, you know, are affecting our communities, in which all of them have to be addressed to be able to move us forward. So you're absolutely right, Joan. I do love to, when the circle is able to keep, the wheel is able to keep turning and people can see how all of the pieces are connected. And I think that's what's most important. People have to see that they are all connected. They're not in silos. And I love what you said, Regina, about people showing up to like budget meetings. You know, you don't have to just vote on election day for engagement, but those city council meetings or your local clerk meetings, county meetings, all of them are where decisions are being made. And if people don't show up to get involved, you know, they say if you're not at the table, you're on the table. And so other folks are making the decisions for you.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I do think I was thinking about the other work that the NAACP does. And you know, in many respects, civic and community engagement is like foundational to those other pieces of work. And you know, the idea that, you know, as we think about opportunity, right, for everybody, we also kind of need to think about the systems with which we operate and start to even turn those on their heads, or at least challenge status quo in the systems that we operate. And that does mean, you know, greater citizenry, really understanding current systems, but also reimagining what a system might look like where we are ensuring that everyone has opportunity, right? Or has not only has the access to opportunity, but the abilities to be able to take those opportunities and do something.
Since our doors opened, COAC Detroit has had a focus on fostering collaboration and strengthening the capacity of nonprofits. So let's dive deeper into collaboration between nonprofits as it relates to civic engagement and public policy. I asked our guests about the power of collective efforts, and have there been times where coalitions or organizations they've been a part of successfully influenced policy change? Whether it's at the national, state, or even local level, let's explore how partnerships like these have driven transformational impact.
Yeah, for us, it's certainly the coalition of organizations that came together for Promote the Vote. a lot of the voting rights that you see expanded in Michigan right now with same-day voter registration, early voting, more military ballot access, no reason absentee voting, you name it, from the last or pre-registration, a lot of that has been the work of Promote the Vote members coming together. So that's NAACP, ACLU, the League of Women Voters, and a few other organizations that said, hey, we want voting rights in Michigan expanded and not suppressed. And so through two ballot referendums, we were able to get those things done. And ballot referendums, especially statewide, are not always easy. But each time over 2 million voters said this is the direction we need to go to change our state constitution to make sure that voting rights are enshrined. And so we've seen significant changes in Michigan, being Michiganders, being able to participate in elections without the barriers that used to be in place. We used to have 30 days of you had to be registered to vote within 30 days. So to go to now say, well, no, you can still register in person up or by mail or online up until 2 days before, 2 weeks before, excuse me. And if it's in less than 2 weeks, you just have to go in person to the clerk's office. We've never had that type of access to voting in Michigan. And now we do. To be able to say you can vote, no reason absentee. There were so many people who used to have to basically lie and just say, I'll be out of town, you know, and out of town could have meant you live in Detroit, but you went to Highland Park or Birmingham for that day. So therefore, you're voting out of town. And it's just like, you don't have to do that anymore. Our military ballots can make sure they're counted when they come in. Pre-registration for 16 and 17 year olds, like I said, so that they're automatically registered to vote when they turn 18. Automatic registration. We didn't have automatic registration in Michigan. So now when you go to get your license, you're automatically registered to vote unless you choose to opt out. All of those things have helped increase access to democracy, preserving democracy, saving democracy. And it certainly would not have happened if all groups did not come together under the Promote the Vote umbrella to be able to say, you know, we knew we knew separately that these issues were important and we all worked together privately. But now, just with the state of our democracy, we were able to have a very open platform to be able to push these voting rights forward. And certainly there's still been advances that are taking place, even in the state legislature more recently with the new Voting Rights Act that is moving forward. So it's been a good time for civic engagement organizations to come together and really be able to push voting rights and voter access in Michigan.
Mila, just curious, if you are at a, I'm sorry, y'all, if you are at a in a situation or position where you could maybe share a little bit with the listeners of what the Michigan Voting Rights Act entails or what's included in that?
Yeah, so a lot of it is protections for our civic engagement workers, as well as making sure that we have better campaign finance laws in place. In addition, making sure that the rights that voters chose that they wanted through Promote the Vote, i.e. that access to more expanded voting rights and access to the ballot, secure drop boxes, protection for clerks, protection for the processes that we've been using to make sure that they stay in place. All of those things are addressed. And so the importance of having them addressed in an act and passed as a law is to make sure that they are enshrined and that it takes more than just a person that may be working in a department to undo a policy or change a process that does not, you know, have to have approval. And so that's why it's really important to just make sure these protections are in law, and to make sure that they cannot just be changed overnight without it going through another process in which it has to be voted upon. So really looking forward to just kind of seeing how these the newer portions play out. And again, you know, we can't deny or can't forget, you know, January 6th. You can't forget what happened at our own Cobalt Hall at the time or Huntington Place at the time with challengers trying to defeat our election and harass the workers that were down there. These things did happen. So we can't just say, you know, oh, nothing like that ever happens. It's not going to happen again. No, it did happen. We saw it in real life. And some of us were down there as it was happening. And so you have to make sure that as we encourage people to get involved in democracy and volunteer to be those poll workers and, you know, volunteer to help with elections, that they are safe. Literally, their physical bodies are safe. And that there is no one that can come against them to cause them harm and not have to face the consequences of choosing to do so.
As we wind down from this important conversation for our sector during the upcoming elections, I can't help but think of how advocating for policies that support an organization's mission can be a powerful tool for change. But often we hear, how can we as nonprofits advocate for policies that advance organizational missions and our collective sector without jeopardizing our 501c3 status? I asked each of our guests to share their final thoughts and the key takeaways of the role nonprofit and community leaders can play during these critical times.
I think maybe I'll follow up a little bit on the topic of nonpartisanship and just to kind of make the point that, yeah, we are seeing that nonprofits are getting heightened scrutiny right now for this work. And, you know, but we should be aware that one of our overarching principles is that we are nonpartisan now and forever, and we are for a good reason. I mean, we want to maintain trust. We want to maintain integrity. And, you know, so that we're maintaining our impact. And the overwhelming majority of 501c3s, whether it's the frontline charities, churches, and foundations, we are all nonpartisan. But that doesn't mean that we still can't advocate for the issues that we care about. All it does mean, though, is that we have to remove politics from the process. So that means we just can't support or oppose candidates. We can't be involved in electioneering, which is just basically we can't be involved in political campaigns. But there's just so much more we can do. Education, awareness, issue advocacy, that kind of thing. And Regina and I talk about this all the time. People get all a lot of times nonprofits get hung up on lobbying and what the do's and don'ts are. But really, that's such a small area of what we can do as nonprofits. So, you know, there are rules, and we have to understand the rules, but we shouldn't be afraid of that. And we should be, you know, make sure that we understand the process and that we're still out there doing the work that we do day in and day out. We're doing it legally, but we shouldn't be afraid of it and that we can still to continue to do it.
Yeah, I would agree with Joan. You know, find a way. There is a connection that exists. You just have to figure out how to tell that story. And so it's really important, like I've said, you know, kind of earlier in the podcast, whether it's you delivering food to families that are in need, whether you are helping small businesses, you know, maybe you just have a voter registration portal on your table when folks come in. Maybe you just make sure that they can see it if you're in a brick and mortar. Maybe it's an email you send out, you know, to help people. Maybe you don't want to focus on registration, but you say, hey, the clerk's office is looking for people to help work the polls. There's a way to make sure people feel connected. And I just want to encourage folks to really find that way. Push the envelope just a little bit. So find a way and then push it. But don't break the law. But just push it just a little bit. Because it really is just so important. And I get it, Joan, because I say it all the time, too. Every election, you know, this is the most important election. And granted, there are some really important issues that have been on the ballot when you talk about women's rights and voting rights. Like, we've had some really significant elections in the last 20 years. But this election in particular, you know, democracy is really on the ballot. And I love the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. They're running a voting rights campaign. And one of their ads says voting is a civil right and it's the right that protects all others. And I believe that is 100% true. So find a way, if you are a nonprofit leader, if you're a servant on a board, even if you're a member and you want to push your nonprofit to be able to do something, find a way where you can make that connection between civic engagement and the work that you're doing and help educate the members that you're touching, because it's really important for them to understand how this cycle and how this ecosystem is all connected.
So I would just say, touching upon a couple of examples, is that Michigan Philanthropy has been kind of partnering with organizations like MNA and also League of Women Voters to really make sure that they're utilizing kind of their convening power their relationships within community to advance the importance of civic engagement. So that's just kind of one way. And this is partnering in terms of being able to kind of publish voter guides for residents, et cetera. I would say that community foundations in particular tend to be really trusted voices. So for nonprofit organizations, being able to connect with local community foundations, I think, is really critical at this juncture because of the trusted voice nature of both groups. And then I would also maybe mention two other quick things. One is, in this conversation, let's also not forget about kind of the down ballots. We oftentimes don't think about judges, and, you know, that is equally important. So let's make sure that we're encouraging folks to read up on all candidates and making sure that they complete the entire ballot. And then the other thing that I would just mention is the importance of the tie between civic and community engagement. They go hand in hand. So it is not just about elections. I know MNA has kind of talked a little bit about Jones talked a little bit about their 10-year cycle campaign, but it is not just about elections. It is about continuous engagement for a healthy democracy. And I think that philanthropy has really leaned into that through the statewide equity fund and piloting the idea of working with in partnership alongside community and to be able to influence decision making in terms of the use of public resources. And I think philanthropy, you know, has a role to play as a convener, as a bridge builder, and certainly as an advocate for equitable, inclusive, community-centered decision making. So again, for us, civic engagement is not divorced from community engagement, which needs to happen 365. That's how many days there are in a year, right? Did I get that right? 365 days.
And the leap year, 366 too, the leap day every 4 years. That's how important it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. What a necessary conversation to have, especially at a time such as this. Thank you to our guest, Camelia K. Landrum, Executive Director at the Detroit Branch NAACP. To learn more, visit DetroitNAACP.org. Also, Joan Gustafson, External Affairs Officer at Michigan Nonprofit Association. Be sure to visit MNAonline.org. And Regina Bell, Chief Policy Officer at the Council of Michigan Foundations. Find out more at MichiganFoundations.org. Given the upcoming elections, we invite you to check out a few voting resources for nonprofit organizations compiled in our show notes. This has been the Natural Collisions Podcast from COACT Detroit. Remember, the word COACT itself means to work together, because we know we cannot have transformational impact if we only work alone. To learn more about our work, visit COACTDetroit.org. Please subscribe to Natural Collisions on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We will be back with more conversations soon. Thank you for listening.